Welcome to the Cherry Picker After Dark, the Patreon exclusive version of the Cherry Picker, the horror movie podcast where we like to kill people, but not really.
It looks like something else when I'm not holding a pen, doesn't it?
It could be any. Well, it's like that Buffy episode, the Hush, where they're doing the presentation, and she's got the steak, and like, well, she doesn't have the steak; she's just using her hand.
Yeah,
and they're all looking at her like, "What, you're gonna masturbate?
Like, what are you?
The monster?
Yeah, exactly.
To
you're gonna
death?
Jerk yeah. off the yeah."
It's oh, like, such a no. great moment. Yeah,
it's great.
Anyway,
anybody who's just listening is completely baffled,
flabbergasted. It's like, what the fuck are these two talking about? Well, today, this is our top 10 retrospective. You know, we've passed the 100 episode milestone. Yeah. We've covered 100 and well, there's a little, it's a little iffy because there was like, we had the one episode that was like the whole Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise minus the new one. And then we also had the Who Killed Who in the Scream franchise one. But for the most part, I'd say at that point where we've done like 100 movies, covered 100 movies. We've also covered more on the Cherry Picker After Dark, but we're just kind of be focusing on the movies that we've covered on the regular podcast today. And what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of go through them and we're going to pick our top 10, as well as a few dishonorable and honorable mentions. So you just kind of go over and just like, you know, where are we at? And just celebrate how far we've come and everyone who's been here with us this entire time or not, if you're new and you have just joined, whether it be this episode or last week or several months back, but we're happy to have you here, which is pretty awesome that we've made it this far. Did you ever think that we would do it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Never doubt.
You knew? Yeah. Okay. There wasn't any moment where you just like turned off the recording. And, like,
and I thought, I don't know how many more times I can do this with Zach Cherry. I really don't. No, I never did that. Why? What about you?
Remember when we first, I think it was like the Evil Dead episode, when we first like had that disagreement. Yeah. It wasn't even like a disagreement. It was just like, wait a second. How do we kind of navigate through before we had the rules? And people were like sending messages in and they're just like, are you two okay? Are you gonna be all right?
I'm like, yeah, I know. I got like, people checking in with me like, how are you doing after that? I'm like, fine. Are you talking to Zach? It's like, is there gonna be a pod next week? I'm like, yes. I think we said it. We addressed it pretty soon afterwards by the time we finished recording that session, because it happened relatively late. It was during the Cherry Picker part of the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's a monumental thing. And that gave way to the rules.
Yeah. In the next episode. By the time we finished recording, we were already laughing and fine. Like, I mean, I was pissed when it was happening, but I remember when it was over, I was like,
you were pissed when it was happening?
Well, because I was like, we're going to have the argument all over again. No, but I just remember thinking like, well, okay, if we're going to put rules in, like, you got to tell me what the rules are before I play the game. And it was like, because I remember just feeling like a steel gate, like coming down on, you know, like, no, you can't choose that. That's against the rules that I just made up. And
I mean,
like, oh, all right. Cool.
Well, I was just not that I've just made up.
I wasn't angry. I was taken aback.
No. I get it. I find that for me personally, I don't know if it's a Scorpio thing or whatever, or just like a me thing. That I have a very difficult time remembering that, like, not everyone has access to my brain. And there's certain things that just like I understand about things and I need to understand that, like, other people, when I'm communicating with them or working on a project with them, that they don't like necessarily see or visualize or understand it the same way I do. So then I do run into issues and then I'm like, oh, wait, no, I need to find a way to kind of translate this to people. And I always run into that problem. So thank you for not thinking that I was a monster in that situation. But yeah, it was.
Oh, no. I mean, I remembered worrying at the time, like, are we going to have to talk about this after we finish recording? Is it going to be awkward? Like, as we're recording. And then by the time we were done recording, we were laughing again and we were having a good time. And I was like, oh, I think we're okay.
Well, I think that's why that anytime we've run into like another thing where it's just like, wait a second, what the fuck are you talking about? Where it's just like, we know what this is and it's not like we've always known, but I think that Yeah. At that point, it was just more sort of just like, what are the listeners and watchers thinking?
I mean, I'm also really grateful to be on the other end of it. When if I'm expressing something and you're not getting it, and you share that with me, I won't get all, well, you just don't get it. You know, I'll be like, oh, cool. Okay. If I didn't explain properly, because perhaps the people listening might not, you know, understand what I'm saying. Maybe I need to rephrase and clarify. And that's helpful in this medium for people to understand where we're coming from.
If you were the type of person who, because I mean, like, you, both of us have like some very spicy takes on movies, and we might even run into some here on this episode. But I mean, like, if you were the type of person who is like unable to comprehend that someone else doesn't have your exact point of view and like get angry in that way, like I'm all for disagreement and like, and challenging people and being challenged on things and like discussing them in a very like intellectual way. But if it's just like, you're, if you were the type of person that was just like, I don't want to fucking do this, like this podcast would not have gone as far as it did. Yeah. We wouldn't be here today doing this. And that's what I appreciate so much about you, because like you have such a unique and different point of view than I do. And sometimes, you know, you say shit and I just roll my eyes. I'm just like, whatever. And vice versa, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, like, if you were the type of person that just, like, agreed with everything I said, then that wouldn't be fun. That would be fucking boring.
The echo chamber is... That bothers me when I listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. When I'm just kind of like, but neither of you are... taking the counterpoint, even like, you know, just like, I could see where people would say this or something like that. Come on.
Yeah. And, or like the Sleepaway Camp episode when you were sure that what's his face was like the father or the brother. I don't know what it was, but I was just like, that doesn't make
any... they were all interconnected and he was just the lover. He was just the gay lover of their father. But I thought he was the husband of... the woman in the beret.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Aunt Martha?
Yeah.
Is Aunt Martha?
The creepy Snow White. Creepier
in a red beret. Yeah.
No, because we've always had things and it's fun. Like that's what I enjoy the most when we get to those places. Anyway, before we get into a whole thing here, hey everyone, this is as mentioned before, a Patreon exclusive. So if you are watching this on YouTube or listening to it, this is just the preview. You're gonna hear our dishonorable and honorable mentions, but then for the top 10 portion, if you want to see all that or hear all that and just get the full episode, head over to my Patreon, Zach Cherry, ZACKCHERRY. Subscribe at the Freddy Krueger tier. You will get access to the full episode as well as all of our other previous Cherry Picker After Dark episodes. There's so much content there. Like there's over 20 of them, and each one it feels like they're like 4 hours each. We try to be conservative sometimes, and it just doesn't work out. But we had the Survivor episodes. Mm-hmm. What else? The Final Girl ranking. We covered
Slasher ranking.
We covered Batman Returns, Jawbreaker.
Yeah.
Wild Things. Yeah. So there's been quite a bit. We wanted to kind of look back on everything for this one. So yeah, if you want to head over there, you can support the podcast as well as like support my main YouTube channel. Yeah. But you will get all that, and we really appreciate it. So thank you to all of the current and past Patreon supporters, and also a big thank you to Boy Cried Wolf, our editor, who has to put up with all the neuroses of both of us.
Andre, our former...
And Andre, yes.
Yeah, he used to call us the divas. And I think when he talks to Boy Cried Wolf, he still does.
We scared him off. But thank you to Andre as well for being part of the Cherry Picker family. Yeah. So without any further ado, let's get into some dishonorable mentions. So we got three. So I feel like there's not going to be any surprises here, and there's probably going to be like some crossover as well. But
really, okay,
we'll see. I'm interested. I'm excited, but I want to hear your What's your first dishonorable mention?
Okay. I made a list for every one of these segments and then kind of prioritized. And
right.
I even went back and listened to some of the pods just to kind of see like for the ones that I have less history with, just to kind of wrap my head around like, what was it I didn't like about that one? Like, why did I pick this one? And anyway, so one of them, and I don't mean to yuck anyone's yum. That's a disclaimer. I'm not saying you're wrong, whoever's watching or listening to this. I'm just saying the prospect of returning to this film is like a thumbs down for me. That's what it evokes. So the first one I'll mention is Leprechaun.
Well, let me first say that... Leprechaun is also among my dishonorable mentions.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. I love Warwick Davis, and I love Jennifer Aniston. Not in this movie, but I love her. And the actor, I can't remember his name right now, but the one who plays the kind of like mentally incapacitated man painter, who's I think we called him the boy in the man's body, and he who played Francis in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I love him, but yeah, there's I mean, St. Patrick's Day has come and gone, and I had absolutely no inclination to return to this movie at all.
I saw people on Twitter that were just like celebrating and just like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day, we do the Leprechaun marathon. And I was just like, how do you even get past the first movie? I think I've seen the first three. I don't remember 2 and 3 all that well. But this one is just, it's painful because it's not just like there are things that we like really joked about and made fun of in this movie, like the fact that this is like this motley crew of painters, like the three of them. I think they're called like Three Men Who Paint or something like that.
Yeah, three guys who paint, something like that.
Yeah, and they only work in like the three primary colors, and it's not like it's not like actual colors that anyone would paint with. It's like it's kindergarten red, yellow, and blue, and it's like, what are they even fucking doing? Like, this movie has no semblance of a plot. It's just like a bunch of random shit happening, and it mostly takes place in this house, in this like little farmhouse, and it just it feels cheap. It feels like this was made for nothing. And even when we leave and we go to like that diner or that like hospital or whatever, it's I'm not excited by the prospect. Okay, we're finally getting out of this place. Like, it's just a bad movie that I can't even glom onto anything camp about it, because it's just it's a miserable time, and I hate the leprechaun, like, anyways, the name, I keep forgetting what it is.
I kept calling him Leppy, but Lubden,
something like that. He's just so obnoxious, as like, just step on him, or, you know, just.
Yeah, the one-liners that are never funny, and the, I mean, it was... the idea of, like, again, sitting down and actually, like, returning to that film, even if it opens with a little promise. I remember enjoying the elderly couple, question mark, in the opening. But it just didn't go anywhere that I wanted it to go. It just, all of the potential for joy to be had, either, you know, like, for the horror of it, or for the humor of it, or the camp, or what have you. None of it, like, no, I don't have it. And I know some people do. Fine. It's not my cup of tea. Don't invite me if you're going to screen this movie on St. Patrick's Day. I think I have a kind of more favorable memory of the first sequel, just because I remember something gross, like, kind of going on. And I thought, oh, that's really gross. I like that. I like gross
Is that
stuff,
the one in like Las Vegas?
No, Vegas, I think, was 3. It's still really kind of confined to the world, if I remember correctly, of the first movie in the second one. But it was more interesting, the directions they went.
The only thing I remember is that Michael McDonald, he was on Mad TV. You'd also remember him more specifically from Halloween Kills. He was the Little John. Who I guess like didn't bother to like run or anything when Michael turned around and slowly walked towards him.
No!
What's funny about that guy is that he also, I mean, not only has he been killed by Michael Myers, but he was also killed by Mike Myers in Austin Powers. He's right. The guy who, the security cop who's just standing there as like the steamroller slowly moves toward. So same death. It's just like, just move. Just get out of the fucking way. I would like to think that someone on Halloween Kills, maybe David Gordon Green, had it in their mind, like, this is actually an homage to that. This is like an inside joke, and did it. But I, maybe that's giving them too much credit. Anyway, Leprechaun, is, I actually, for like these dishonorable mentions, I didn't want to just pick the bottom three in just terms of like Letterboxd scores. But this to me is 1 out of 5. Maybe it was like 0.5 star out of 5, actually.
This is like voting your conscience, voting your heart.
Yeah. No, like what would you rate it?
Oh, Leprechaun? Oh, God. I mean, I gave Old 1 star. So it's about on par with Old, I'd say, in terms of like my capacity for enjoyment with it. So, I mean, there, you know, Warwick Davis is in it and the makeup's adequate.
Yeah. I guess I'm looking at it. A star. I'm looking at it here. I also gave it 1 star. So 1 out of 5. Okay. I suppose that was already one of my dishonorable mentions, but my next dishonorable mention is Halloween Resurrection. And I don't think that that's a surprise for anyone. And you as well?
Yes.
It shouldn't come as a shock because like we've only covered so many movies and like these were the bad ones. But I mean, in similar sentiments, like this is a movie that even if you like try to find any sort of camp value in, it's just the thing that like really shines through the most was just the lack of care and consideration on anyone's part. When making this is just like a studio film where they decided that we're just going to give the bare minimum. It was just like, we know that people love Michael Myers and that's all that matters. It's like, we have him. Let's spend the least amount of money as possible. It's all going to be a single setting location. Let's use the shittiest fucking like low definition cameras available to us and put most of the movie on that film stock. And make it this reality thing because, like, what's popular right now? Reality television. And yet nothing about this is anywhere, like, resembles what reality television was at the time. There is really no story to this. The fact that, like, Jamie Lee Curtis is dispatched of, and I mean, that is not all, like, you know, her fault or the writers or this, it was just like kind of a combination of just like a lot of unfortunate things that came out of H2O. But it just feels like this hodgepodge of just terrible ideas strung together into this low effort movie that, you know, doesn't, it's just like, even like when Halloween is at its worst in other situations, like, I feel like I'm at least watching cinema with this. It's just like kind of like this bland, almost like spec script that they took it. Like it wasn't even meant to be a Halloween movie. The studio is just like, oh, let's just do, you know, to save even more money, convert this into a Halloween movie.
Yeah. I 100% agree, obviously. Yeah. The only other thing I can say is I think the ones who suffer the most as a result of that kind of like, neglect or that kind of error in judgment when there is potential for some, you know, greater storytelling, is the audience. I think, you know, like I feel it. I think I said in the pod, this is one, sometimes you see something and you don't like it and then you return to it and you're in a different place in your life and you get something that you didn't get before. I am always back to square one with this movie. I have not grown with it. It has not grown on me. I and yet I know I will return to it at some point, but I'm not happy about
it. It's like an abusive relationship that you just
It totally can't is. Leave. It's like the guy you sleep with because you know you can. And not even necessarily like, oh, well, you know, it maybe not even abusive, but I definitely, I'm hearing like racial slurs. I'm hearing, you know, like conspiracy theories against, you know, entities that I care about, and I'm like, oh god, I gotta get out of here. What am I doing here? Oh, why did I come back? Yeah. So that's what this movie is for me. It's just like a mistaken one night stand that I will return to every few years.
I know a lot of people have kind of gotten on this bandwagon of almost like negating its existence. Like they'll, you know, everyone has their favorite timeline, and a lot of people like the 1-2-H2O. And it's just like, but then like it finishes off with resurrection. Like, no, we don't count that. Like, it's just the story ends when.
Which doesn't seem fair. Yeah. I mean, you can do what you want, but
no, it
it's
doesn't
part
seem,
of that timeline.
It doesn't seem fair. And I mean, the thing is like every fucking, like my favorite timeline is the 1-2. Yeah. Well, technically, I mean, it's not a timeline. I love the, what I call like the John Carpenter, Deborah Hill, like, you know, the 1-2-3. Because that's all like part of his production team. But I mean, timeline wise, I'm 1-2-4-5-6.
Same.
Because it's like, it's Donald Pleasance. Like, there's so much, like, I love all of those movies. Like, they're all great in my books. But of course, you know, I really love 5 and 6 as well. So that's just me. I know that that's not everyone's cup of tea, but like with, the new timeline, like, you know, so many people hate, like, whether it's like kills or ends, it's just like, that's not a, nobody's having a good time 100% there. If you are, congratulations. I'm impressed by that. But it's just like, whichever way you slice this franchise, it's just, it's not a good time. And it's so weird that now they're already like bringing it back. They're finding like a new, like a, whether it's a TV show or.
Oh, I knew they would.
Like, just let it breathe for a little while.
You know? Not while they can make a buck, and it's still fresh in people's minds. Yeah. And also people, I think a lot of people are anxious to see a refreshing new thing. So, I mean, there's that. The tickets are going to sell.
Yeah.
Or if it's on a platform, the subscriptions are going to, you know.
I just hope that it doesn't get any lower than Halloween Resurrection.
Well, yeah, me too.
Because, I mean, at least...
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say, at least for, like, the Rob Zombie films, which, I like, they have their fan base. I don't want to say that those... I don't discount them. I think that, like, Halloween 2, like, his Halloween 2 has, like, really great, like, cinematic value. But, like, even the David Gordon Green stuff, like, there is passion put into those movies, whereas Resurrection is just devoid of everything.
Yeah, and I know passion is key with you. With me also, I'm glad you brought up kills and ends, because they actually both occurred to me when you first told me we were going to be doing these dishonorable mentions. And as I started scrolling through our catalog so far, I realized, like, I don't really race to return to those either. But I know when I sit down to watch them, there's going to be things that I will absolutely appreciate in a big way. It's just the fall on the ride is harder. But the problem with Halloween Resurrection for me is there is no fall. It flatlines at the beginning and it just continues. It just continues to flatline. And it can't go any lower because there is nowhere to go until you think there's nowhere to go. And then you start seeing Michael Myers having his forehead knocked on. And then you see him getting karate kicked by Buster. And I'm just like, just end me. Just not even the movie. Take me out of the equation.
To its credit, though, those might be some of the better moments of the film, because at least something is happening. But yeah, it's pretty abysmal. A friend of mine, she likes to call Halloween Resurrection an affront on the franchise, and I think it's the perfect way to explain that movie.
I agree. Yeah. Okay, so
we each got one more.
Yeah. Okay, and I know that this one we don't share.
Okay.
And I know that I'm gonna probably potentially like make some people angry saying this. So again, just want to reiterate, not yucking your yum. Just saying, it is so not my thing. The prospect of returning to this movie, even when I know there is a sequel on the horizon, it's the black phone. Looking back on it just off of my memory, I was like, yeah, I really have a bad taste in my mouth from that movie. And if you want to fight me in my DMs, feel free. We'll discuss, you know. But even when I went back and I did listen to that pod and I was listening to the points I was making and I was just like, oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that really bothered me too. And it just, I mean, I may end up having to see the sequel because we're probably going to cover it for this pod. And there is a curiosity about where it's going. But what's already been laid out so far, all I can say is I have an absolute distaste for it. It is not, none of the choices that were made feel like they were made with me in mind or people like me. It just feels antagonistic, to everything that attracts me to horror and even a little cynical in terms of the, I guess the tenets of the genre itself. Now, I know there are a lot of people who like this movie and not even, there are some people who love this movie and some people who just like it. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. What's your problem? That's fine. I'm not one of those people.
I don't hear anything about it anymore. That's the thing. It's just like when it came out, it was like this huge thing. Mm. Like, you know, I'm going to say it, like it was, seemed a little overrated. I thought it was fine. I think it, you know, has moved down in my estimation from originally seeing it. But, you know, my issues with it were like, it felt like it was really overwritten in certain things. Like they're just like kind of setting up plot twists that didn't really serve any purpose. It was almost like this little flourish at the end, like, oh, we did the Silence of the Lambs thing. Like, well, what, it was like the house across the street. Like it just, that was dumb. I think like the strength of the movie was the relationship between the siblings. But it was one of those movies that came and went. I was actually thinking about the recording we did of it because it was the correlation to A Nightmare on Elm Street when the girl breaks the vodka bottle and you were quoting Nancy, but like as the little girl to her father, like what does he say again? What did like Nancy say to her mom?
Oh, whoa, it's a screw sleep! And she breaks
No, but she says, like, how about I just grab a bottle?
How about I just get, just veg out with you, you know?
So I'm just picturing this, the little girl, not Violet McGraw, but, like, the sister, because it was, like, her sister in real life. Yeah, just, like, saying that to the dad, this, like, creepy, abusive father. And for whatever reason, like, child abuse does not make me laugh, but the idea that it was like, oh, it's like they're doing the Nightmare on Elm Street thing. Because, like, even, like, Nancy's mom slaps her in that
scene. Well, also because we're talking about a movie where, maybe this enticed some people to it. Yeah. But the fact that there was like, you know, the villain on the poster is, you know, like supposedly like, you know, the movie's big bad. He's the one who needs to be defeated and who we need to see them break free from. And yet the one who I'm really afraid of that during that whole movie is their abusive father who apologizes and is very, you know, seemingly willing to atone for what he has done by the end of the film, for spoilers. Yeah. but the way it was handled, I remember thinking kind of thumbs up, like, okay, they didn't just like hug him and say, it's okay. They were both just kind of like, all right, whatever. But that's, again, the fact you bring up like this brother-sister dynamic, that should be absolutely in my wheelhouse. Like I really love things that celebrate sibling strengths or dynamics. Yeah. And there was something about it that, again, like you said, I'll just echo what you just said, that it felt underwritten to me. Or
I said it was overwritten but it was underwritten. It was both underwritten where it counted and overwritten where it didn't. Because I feel that like the grabber, the Ethan Hawke character, was completely underutilized. Because you said he wasn't the heavy of the movie. Like, he was barely in it. Maybe he had like 5 or 10 minutes of screen time. And he was mostly just sitting there.
And he actually even made me, the more I thought about it, I was just kind of like, you know, I think I'd rather watch the Nightmare on Elm Street remake than the Black Phone.
Oh, wow.
No, without a doubt. If you ask me, we're going to watch one of these two, which do you want to watch? I'd say, let's do Nightmare, because at least like it, that one spirals downward, but there are some things I can glom onto, very isolated.
I don't agree with you in terms of that, but
we'll discuss that on that pod
if we ever get to that. What do you give the Black Phone? What's your letterboxed?
Oh God.
Gun to your head.
I'm debating between like half a star and a star. Like,
okay, wow.
Yeah, there was so much. I'm trying to think about like a thing. Even the positive things, I feel like it's like, well, I'll give you that, but it doesn't make me. I'm not even enthusiastic about the positives about the movie, and that for me is a true negative. Like when I'm just kind of like, I'll surrender that, whatever, or I'll admit it, but it doesn't make me like the movie anymore. Like. But I don't judge anybody for liking it, but
Well, I was just going to say, that's another thing. We don't judge people for liking the stuff that we don't like. Like, we have a Patreon supporter, Matthew, who has like messaged me before just saying how much he loves Halloween Resurrection for all the reasons that we hate it. Mm. Just like in terms of like he finds the camp value in it. So it's just like, that's the thing. I'm not going to judge anyone because they find something good in it. This is all we can do on this platform is speak our truth and put honestly, it out there. And you can agree with it or you can disagree with it. But if you're going to hate us for it, you know, maybe you should look inwards, you know, there's something.
It's nothing personal. I'm not going to say if you like this movie, you should look inwards. No, if you're going to criticize a person and their capacity to, you know, comprehend a film because they like a movie,
don't be shitty. I mean, I haven't seen The Black Phone since the first time I saw it in the theater. I give this, according to my letterbox here, 3 stars. So, I mean, it might have moved down since then, but I don't hate it the same way you do. My last pick for dishonorable mention isn't even like in terms of like my letterbox score, not even like the next worst thing after Leprechaun and Resurrection. It is 30 Days of Night, I mean, it's still pretty low down there, but I mean, like, I was just like looking at other movies because I gave this 2.5 stars, and now I'm thinking, like, should I put it even lower? Because like Freddy Krueger, I had it 2 stars, but it's just like I would much sooner revisit Freddy versus Jason, and even like the My Bloody Valentine remake and stuff like that, then go back to 30 Days of Night, because I just felt that this movie was so devoid of life and story. Like there really was no driving plot. It just seemed like a vignette of just like really unfortunate things, and we didn't even really get the full experience of like the 30 days. It just felt like it was sort of the beginning, and then all of a sudden we're like, we're at day 30. And the look of the movie, which I know is like a stylistic choice, it's not exciting. All the color was drained out of it. We didn't even really get to know any of the characters in the same way that we do for a lot of stuff like that. Like, we did this movie recently, and I don't even remember the movie. That's how awful it is. Like, I'm just looking at the other stuff. It's like, is Anaconda, you know, it might be on the same level, but at least with Anaconda, like, we have fun.
Yeah,
you know, shitting on that. It's just like, oh my God, like just like John Voight and his weird accent and Owen Wilson and J-Lo and all that. Like there's even going back to something like that, there's something to take out of it. With 30 Days of Night, I'm just miserable for the entire runtime.
Sure. I mean, I did wonder about Anaconda. It made the roster of consideration for me at the bottom of the barrel. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, oh, but I love how ridiculous that ending is. And I love all the John Voight with his, I don't even know any of his lines, but just that greasy, gross,
the monkey, you know, the monkey blood.
and even just like watching, you know, like from the Anaconda's POV when it eats that jaguar, we learned how to pronounce jaguar with each other. Jaguar. I thought at least there's fun to be had there. It's not a good movie at all, but I would watch it again in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely.
And as far as 30 Days of Night, just I do remember that discussion, and I remembered that was one of the ones where it felt like you dislike it and I have notes. Like,
yeah.
<know? laughs>
Yeah, totally. All right, cool. What would you give 30 Days of Night?
Oh, shit. Somewhere it'd probably be between like 2 stars and 2.5.
Okay.
I'd have to think which Fair. One. I don't
so
know.
So it's probably like we're same as me.
Yeah, but yeah. You're going to lower it. So.
Well, no, because I mean, it's still there. Like, there's still like good stuff to be had. But that's the thing. It's hard to rate, like, kind of like rate movies when you start to consider things like the quality of the movie versus the. Like the fun that you have with it, because like Freddy versus Jason, like I don't love that movie, but you know, when you're comparatively got the two next to each other, this is a worse movie, but which one am I going to revisit? Like it's weird. Like I don't like, that's where there's certain nuances in your personal rating system, or at least for me, that's where I get confused. That's where I don't know which way do I go with something.
That's why I'm continually evading, or not evading, but like struggling with this problem of what does favorite mean? Does it mean this is the best made, or does it mean this is the one that I feel the strongest response to in a positive way? Because those are two different things.
Yeah.
There are some very well-made films that bore the shit out of me, or that don't, but I see them once and I've seen them. I don't need to return to them. And then there are some films that are flawed as hell, and I will watch them for the rest of my days, you know?
But so. I mean, that's why it's good to do this, because it's, you know, it helps us refine our system, you know, whatever works best for us. So we can just have the most authentic point of view about what we like and don't like.
100%.
All right, let's move into the honorable mentions. I'll let you go first, but I just want to say for these are not necessarily like 11th, 12th, and 13th place for me. I kind of picked movies that surprised me that you know, either I feel like they're underrated or just something that I hadn't seen in a while and I watched them like, oh, this is really good. So I don't know how you did it, if it is your 11th, 12th, and 13th, but that's just how I was doing it.
I came, like, cards on the table, I came up with 20 titles total for, I was just weeding things out going, oh, that's got to be there. That's got to be there. I love this one. And I ended up with 20 titles, and I was like, oh, shit. And then I refined it, I whittled down, I ranked them, and then I realized, okay, so the top 10 are my top 10, and I guess the next three are my honorable mentions. Okay. So we were operating, again, we're operating in a slightly kind of, like, different ranking system here. But but be that as it may, I am very comfortable with these. I don't think it's going to make much difference either, because you know me and my rankings. If I have to, I am definitely going to lean toward the personal, toward what I carry with me and what I think, like, if I want to share a movie with somebody and go, like, you'll understand me better if you see this. I'll more likely choose that movie.
So this is, so you're going to be saying them in order from.
Sure.
Okay. I don't have a specific order for mine, but okay. That's what's your first one?
It's all discussion. Yeah. Okay, so my the first one I will bring up is Sleepaway Camp. Ironically enough, we were just discussing it, and I just it's got this niche in that it's carved out for itself in cinema history. You couldn't like remake this movie or even try to follow a trend with this movie and come up with a successful result, I feel, if you tried. It's such an incredible accident, and I mean that in the most esteemed of ways. I just I remember the first time I saw it, I was shocked, and I like throughout the film things kept shocking me, and I was like, I can't believe, number one, this got made. I think it was about 20 years before I had seen it, maybe it was more, maybe closer to 25, 30. I don't remember exactly, but I just remember being stunned and at the same time thinking this couldn't have been made any other time than the early 1980s, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, for obvious reasons, especially today, but it found this curious balance between perverse and innocent. and walked this playful line, somehow managed to find joy in the grittiest, most disgusting impulses of human beings, and find find affection from me, like warrant affection from me for characters that might just be cardboard cutouts, but it's like it's a cardboard cutout with a beating heart and a massive hard on. So I can't make heads or tails of it. It's just astonishing to me. So that's the first one I'll bring up.
Yeah. That's Sleepaway Camp is definitely one that every time I revisit it, because I haven't watched it that many times. But every time I see it, it's almost like I forget how good it is or how much I really do love it. And it sort of just gets better every time. But I echo everything that you say. I mean, not to say that we disagree on everything, but it's certainly, it's certainly one that it does everything that it should be doing 100% correct. And there's no way that a movie like this could exist. I haven't seen the sequels, but it's like, you can't remake something like this. This is, it's so specific to, you know, the time, and just like culturally when it came out and just the things that were allowed to be in movies. So I think this is a great honorable mention. I like this one a lot. I personally gave it 4 stars. What about you?
I don't know. I haven't even put it in my, I need to update my letterbox, but, I'd say 4.5 easily.
Oh, okay. Nice. Very, very nice. Okay. The first honorable mention I have is Single White Female. There was, because I remember when we went into recording that, just like, well, this is just going to be a filler episode, because it's just like, let's just delve into something more obscure, which is not really obscure, but I think maybe more so in like, as time has gone by, it's one of those movies that's been forgotten. But like when it came out, it was probably like a big hit, because movies like that, sort of like the salacious thriller, was all the rage in the early 90s. But, you know, as we went through the episode and talked about it, I just realized like, oh, I really like this. And I actually like it a lot better than I thought I did. And it just, you know, even thinking back on it, just like you have so much fun with it. And it is that kind of the time-tested trope of just like, I guess like the All About Eve situation. Sure. It's basically just a remake of All About Eve, but like in a roommate situation. And we've seen this premise play out so many times, but this might be my favorite version of it outside of like All About Eve, just because of, I mean, first of all, the performances. You have Bridget Fonda and Jennifer Jason Leigh, and it's just like it's so dated. Like it's ripped from 1992, that this is another movie that you could remake. I mean, because they have, obviously, but like this specifically, like to remake Single White Female, it would just never happen. It would never be the same. And there's just something so amazing about just like, even like the sets, or like, I'm not sure if it was a set or a real apartment, because like, there are no apartments like that anymore. It's like everything about it was this specific vision, and just the psychology behind it of just like, how far do you let something go on? Because like remember we had trouble picking the cherry on top. We ended up going with the dog, because it's just like, everyone in this movie is kind of an asshole, because they're, whether they're enabling the other person or they're just kind of like, almost like the sin of omission, or just like, we're just going to ignore seriously wrong behavior, that it's just like an interesting psychological study to see like at what point do you put your foot down when you are living with someone who is that disturbed, to the point where they're like, they're having your exact same hairstyle and color and wearing your clothes. Oh, and I mean, the stiletto heel death. Yeah. So I don't know. That's what I got to say about it.
Just a little side note. I was listening to, of all things, Bring It On, the musical, this week, and they have an All About Eve esque story in that, where the main cheerleader is kind of like mentoring this young cheerleader, and then she leaves and then she comes back and she finds that the young cheerleader has dyed her hair the same shade of blonde as the head cheerleader, and is like going after her man and is doing all this. And her name is Ava. And I remember the first time they said her name, I was like, all about Ava. You know, I don't know. It's just, it's all over. It's omnipresent. And I love that. That's great. It didn't make my particular honorable mentions, but I do adore that movie. I just don't return to it that often. because it is, there is a bleak world view at play there, but there's also that wonderful, salacious Adrian Lyne-esque, I think we alluded to as much in our discussion. Sensuality that, you know, your fatal attractions, your basic instincts, and your body of evidences, you know, whatever. Hurrah. Yeah. Hurrah.
Thank you. And I give this 4 stars.
Oh, cool. I think I'd probably give it the same.
Nice.
Maybe three and a half.
I think you'd give it 4.
I think I would. I'm on the spot. Who knows? Okay. So next one I'll bring up. Silent Night, Deadly Night. I know it's not going to be one of yours. And if you've listened to that particular episode, you know where I'm coming from. Like, everything that I said basically about Sleepaway Camp is also true of Silent Night, Deadly Night in terms of making the unacceptable entertaining for me and palatable. Like, these despicable acts are committed, and they're not even committed necessarily with a tongue-in-cheek. Like, they're done with sincerity and brutality, just kind of like at a B, or dare I say it, C movie, you know, level of filmmaking and budget. But there's an earnestness to it, and a real story about a character that, as outrageous as it is, which is basically like Santa gone wrong. It's bad Santa before bad Santa, and or killer Santa, probably. And but it takes this unlikely villain, you know, this heavy of this movie, but makes him the protagonist. And not even the anti-hero, because of the context of his story, which you learn when you watch the movie, he's a sympathetic character. And the real heavy of that movie is the one who is, well, there's a few, but the real one that you want to see die.
Yeah.
Is this figure of authority, that was abusive to him his entire childhood, when he needed someone to understand and be compassionate. And the fact that it was all happening in the Catholic Church. I mean, I was raised Catholic, so it's especially personal.
And you're talking about Mother Superior, right?
Yeah.
Who I do believe.
Spoil it in case people haven't seen it.
Who I do believe was the winner of the cherry picker for that episode.
I think
as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
because that one I didn't listen to again, but yeah.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, but that's another one for me. I just adore it, and I watch it every year.
Okay, I agree with you in terms of like the earnestness about it and all. I just think that there's something tacky that I don't like. Whereas, like, I don't get that from Sleepaway Camp. Like, I feel like there, like, everything that's going on there just feels like it's just like it's purposeful. In a way, whereas like a lot of this, it just feels like it's just they wanted to make a better movie, and it just, for me, it wasn't. It was just kind of like a trashy little slasher, which, I mean, it's fine. Like, I give this 2.5. It's not one that I like to revisit.
I can't see it through that lens at all. I mean, again, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Exactly.
And I mean, I could say with the 2 honorable mentions I've brought up, Sleepaway Camp and Silent Night, Deadly Night, I can understand if people flat out did not like them. That's fine. But I think exactly those points are what make them appealing to me. And in our discussion, I remember it was much more successfully executed with my makeup, my psychological makeup and my response than it was with yours. And so that's not a surprise, but yeah cool. Fair.
What do you give it?
I didn't know I was going to have to rate.
Oh,
rate,
come on.
Like them this way. Okay, stars.
You knew what you were getting into here.
Probably. No, I didn't. I really didn't. Okay, so like, and you know, putting me on the spot. Yeah. 4. Let's say 4. 4.
Okay. 4.
I guess.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. The next movie that I have for an honorable mention is Red Eye, Wes Craven's little thriller there. And this is one that I was not expecting, because this is I haven't seen it in so long, like, because I got the 4K back last year whenever it came out, and we did the episode. And I had such a good time with it. And it just, there's so much, like, it's so scream coded in, you know, a certain way, like, you know, more so towards the end, like when he's chasing her through the house and, you know, she's hiding and he kind of comes in there and it's almost like Ghostface. But the fact that you have this movie and so much of it takes place on this plane, and it's just like the two of them sitting right next to each other for most of the movie, and that you get that like Hitchcockian tension, like it doesn't feel stagnant, the energy, like it's just like there's always something happening and you feel the tension, and just the, of course, Wes Craven being Wes Craven, bringing this all to life on an airplane where there's so many people around, but it's like, you know who they are, like that there's just personalities of just like the smallest characters, like, you know, Kyle Gallner is like the kid, the brother of the kid with the pen or whatever, but you remember him. You remember like the lady with the Dr. Phil book and the one with the scarf who's just like, you know, like flirting with him at first, but then kind of turned off, and then this, and the flight attendants. And it's just like, there's so much fun to be had here. And it's not, you know, even then, like we're kind of cutting to other stuff, like at the hotel with other characters and then her father. That it's just like a really, like, it feels like probably the most contemporary version of like what like a Hitchcock thriller might have been like at that time that it came out in the mid 2000s. And it's a short film, but it's just lean and moves so quickly. And I mean, if there's just like any complaint I have to it, it's just like, I wish that there was more, like, I wish we had more to it, but then it would be like, did this run too long?
Interesting. I mean, I remember having a much, I think we both said that this much in the discussion, that I had a much more positive experience the second time around than I did with my initial screening back in the movie theater, which was the last time that I had seen it. Mm-hmm. And but I remember there were still like some beats that started to lean into like more of an action feel for me toward the end. But I would see it again in a heartbeat. Like, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, it doesn't have to make the honorable mention list for me to like it. Like, I think it's a damn good time, and I would encourage anybody to see it. So nice.
Absolutely. Nice. Yeah.
What would you rank it? How many stars would you give it?
I have it at 4 stars here, but, you know, I might need to watch it again, because I feel like, you know, like, I don't see why it couldn't be 4.5. But again, it's just, it's one that I, you know, I want to revisit. I'm ready to. And that's, you know, you could say like the same thing with a lot of Wes Craven movies, like even like Cursed, which was not a movie that we favored all that much, but like, that's a movie that like there are great things in it.
Yeah.
That I love to go back and revisit. It's just like, it's just unfortunate that, you know, what came out of it, because it could have been so much better.
Yeah.
What do you give Red Eye?
I'd say, again, I may vacillate. I'd have to decide between like 3, 3.5, and 4. It'd be one of those. I don't know which. Okay.
All right.
Am I next?
You are.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this one, I think the only reason it's here as opposed to the list is time. I need more time with it, but who knows? Yeah. Maybe also, I just love my list so fucking much.
Yeah.
So, but I, given the brief amount of time I've had with this movie, like it, I can't wait to see it again, actually. And it's Last Night in Soho. That experience, it was one of those cases where I was in a movie theater post-pandemic, and I was just kind of like, this is why I go to the movies. For experiences like this, to just the way it happened to me, I love you know me, I love a good literary feel to a film, where I feel like as much that I'm watching a movie and experiencing the cinematography and the colors and, you know, the angles of the camera and everything like that, but I also feel like I'm reading a really great book and getting to know, like, because I'm getting, feel that I'm getting to know the characters that well, and just because the world that they're inhabiting is that interesting to me. It's like a book I can't put down. And the performances are I'll just make orgasmic noises for the rest of my life. And I think about it. Things about that movie occur to me all the time. And even just in terms of like the way I myself sometimes view women, or the way I can observe someone else viewing a woman. I don't know. It got inside, you know, it felt like it was always there, and yet they made it and it was like, it got in, and it's still, I still house that movie with, yeah, you know, every fiber of my being.
I think that when we discussed it, there was kind of like a thing that I had brought up as how the act structure of the movie, it wasn't necessarily in terms of like story beats, because normally, like, it's, you know, a story, you would get to a point like in the first act where like something happens, like a complication that changes everything. And then like, again, moving from like the second act into the third act. And there wasn't really anything like that. It was more so based on like emotional character beats because of just what she was going through, or how she perceived the world or the worlds around her, which I thought was such an interesting thing. And that kind of bespeaks to what you're saying of just like how it does kind of get inside of you. I also think that I was going to mention this, but I was holding off just in case you had brought it up, that there is a single white female in this, to this movie as well, which is the fact that she does kind of become, what's her name?
Was it Sandy?
Sandy, yeah. It's Sandy. No, where Ellie becomes Sandy through the jacket and the hair and all that. And no, I think that this is a beautiful movie, and it's probably in terms of everything. Like, it's hard to say because, you know, I love X and I love Pearl. But other than those two, Last Night in Soho has been the best movie experience that I've had in this genre since, like, I guess in this decade, in the 2020s. And there's just, there's so, like, it's a giallo and it's a ghost story. Like, there's just supernatural and slasher elements to it that it's just such a wonderful film. And I always relish revisiting this one. So that's a really good pick. I personally give it 4.5 stars.
Yes. I think I have ranked that one, and I think I did give it 4.5. And I might have either thought about writing or did write, I'll give this 5 stars eventually, but I need more time with it. Yeah. You know, something like to that vein. So, yeah. Okay. So what about yours?
My last honorable mention is Identity. Yeah. And it was funny because you mentioned that to me today, and I was just like, oh, shit, did he pick this for something as well? but the... I've always loved this movie. Like, I remember seeing it when it came out, and there's just something about it, 'cause it's another one of those like multifaceted horror films where it's like a whodunit murder mystery, but it's also this sort of like psychological thriller too. Is there like supernatural elements? Like, there's a mystery to it, and the pieces slowly come together over time, and just like the way that it all does that. I know that you didn't like the reveal, if I recall, I thought it was great just because it's just like, you didn't see movies like that back in the 2000s. And like, you still don't really see movies like that getting made. And I think that it boasts such an amazing cast. Like, there's so many like powerhouse actors in this movie, left, right, and center. And, I don't know. There's like, it taps into, because I was saying, like, kind of like the whodunit murder mystery aspect of it all. Like, there is a little bit of Scream in there, but it, you know, there's a lot of Hitchcock too. Like, they're at this motel, there's a lightning storm, they're stranded. Like, everything about like the setting of the movie is just like, it's just like masturbatory in terms of just like what I look for in horror films. So I. There's not much more I can say about it, but it's just one of the movies that I was looking at everything and it stood out to me because, you know, I could have picked, you know, things like Valentine, which is another one that's like moved up in my estimation, or like What Lies Beneath was another one. And I was just like, no, like I really feel like connected to Identity, and it kind of had, there is like, you know, aspects of Argento to it as well that I really loved. So yeah, for me, this is my last honorable mention.
See, that's awesome, and it makes me really happy, and I'll tell you why. Because at first, when I was comprising my bottom list, my dishonorable mentions, It was in consideration. I was like, I gotta think about it. Because I remember you, if you remember our discussion, you had a much more positive reaction to it. And me, it was like, even the positive stuff, it was like, I would have liked it better if it would have happened here. Or I would have, you know, like that kind of thing. But and that was one where I was like, I don't want to go back and watch the movie just yet. But I did go back and I listened to our discussion. And while I was hearing the points I was making, I was like, yeah, I remember that. And I remember that. And I was hearing the points you were making too. And may I say, I was really critical of that movie. And the fact that you liked it is like, if anybody wants to watch us like get along famously because of Zach, like watch that, watch that episode, because like you're taking all of my criticism in and you're identifying the things you agree with. And you're also identifying the things you don't. And it never got personal. It never got, you know, turned into a fight or like a, well, you just don't understand. It was just cool because you were citing the things that worked for you and why. And it just about like, our facts, you know, and our truth. And it was really cool because it made me realize I can't put this in my dishonorable mentions, because even though it's not my cup of tea, that's not reason enough to put it like in my bottom. Like even if I were comprising a list of dishonorable mentions, I would have plucked it out, you know, like I would have plucked it out because I'm like, it's just not my thing. That doesn't mean I have disdain for it. In fact, after hearing our pod, it made me, my mother loves mysteries. And I thought like, maybe I should screen it for my mom and like screen it with her. I would sit through it again if I could see it through her eyes and see, did you like it? Did you not like it? And why? And, but ultimately, as will be the case as we uncover kind of more scenarios, that are depicted in this vein, Agatha Christie's just kind of not my thing, you know, the structure. And this was borrowed from a story of hers, right? So, yeah.
I mean, yeah, like it's just like kind of the and then there were none, or I think that's what it is.
Yeah. I think that's what it was too. Yeah.
There's another name for it that's not politically correct anymore, but you know.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. I give this one 4.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd probably lean more. I'd go about halfway with it. I think about 2.5. But I, like I said, I got to watch it again.
Yeah.
And now I will with my mom, and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. I can't wait. All right. That is going to be it for the free preview on YouTube. And if you're listening, so thank you for making it this far. And if you would like to hear the rest, head over to Patreon. Would really appreciate it. But having said that, thank you for watching and listening, and we'll be right back next week.